And don't forget, the first Sunday of the month, of course, I'll be on the air. Ian Punnett on Saturday. I'll be doing this Sunday night's program. Special two-part show for you Sunday night. Danyon Brinkley and his wife Catherine join us to talk about their new work. And then later on in the show, Tom Blees comes back to us to talk about remarkable ways to get new energy sources. I'll be back in a moment, though. More of your open line calls on Coast to Coast AM. And back to the phones we go. Let's go to Jane in Texas City, Texas. Hey, Jane, welcome.
Yes, hello. I wanted to just touch on that collective consciousness
sure.
that you were mentioning. Not only is that something that institutions fear in music, they also do in religions, as you can see with the Chinese government taking the monks into custody.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sect called the Falun Gong that they've actually put...
Oh, they're after them, too.
Yes, as a matter of fact, they are, from what I'm understanding by talking to some of the Falun Gong that have escaped over here, they're... you know, actually having them on life support systems because they refuse to eat. And yes. they're actually selling their organs on, you know, over the internet worldwide. And as soon as the acceptable bid comes in, they actually put the victim to sleep and
take the,
extricate the organs. And then they
make the money.
And the paperwork reads that they committed suicide. So I just wanted to know what you thought about that.
I believe that. You know what? I would believe that's probably going on. I'll tell you another thing the Chinese are doing that outrages me as well, and they are skinning little puppies and animals alive and using their coats, and that just disgusts me. It's just disgusting. Let's next up. I don't want to talk about it yet, but maybe that's a show. Let's go to our wild card line in Pomona, California. You're on Coast to Coast. Contesina, is that how we pronounce your name?
You stumbled on that one, huh?
Uh-huh.
That's Contesina.
Contesina. How are you?
I'm just terrific. I want to tell you about a singer. Did you know Johnny Horton?
I did not.
You know of him?
He's not with us anymore, is he?
No, and he had the song, The Battle of New Orleans.
Okay.
Remember it now?
Yeah.
Well, this is about him after death.
After death.
Yes, this was in 1959, you know, the same year when I met him, and then he was killed the next year by a drunk driver. And I met him when he was in Las Vegas entertaining at the Showboat Hotel, and it was real cozy and nice, and there you could mill around, you know, and
yeah.
we got to talk to each other. We wanted to talk to each other about spiritual things. And, gosh, there's so much I could spend a week telling you about him.
We only have a few minutes.
I know, we don't have a week.
I don't know if you think people would like to listen for a week about Johnny Horton?
They would about this because
really?
It touches on all of the things,
okay.
like the planet, even goes to the planet Nibiru. And
you talked with him about this?
Well, it's a very strange thing. Oh, guys, there's so much I want to tell you. I want to go to quickly about his life and death. We were telepathically in tune with each other. And when we had to part because he was going on the road, you know, and I was going home with my husband to San Diego. And so we kept in touch telepathically.
All right.
And after he died, and I heard it that morning on the radio, and I said to myself, the first step is taken of us being together.
How old was he when he died? What happened to him?
Well, he was killed by a drunk driver going home from a show. He was, he was just 35, and he was 3 years older than me.
Pretty young.
Yeah, yes, but like he told me, he says, I'm an old soul, he said about himself. Okay.
And why do I think he's still communicating with you?
Just why do you think that?
I just think he is.
Well, you're so right. You're so right. He's with me all the time. But I couldn't find him at first after he died. I thought this was going to be a cinch that day when they announced his death. I said to myself, the first step has been taken. And yet time passed, and I hadn't had any contact with him. I was kind of, you know, wondering what's holding it up.
What's he doing now? Is he up there with, like, Elvis?
No, he's right here with me.
Oh, he's with you?
Yeah, he's my soulmate. He's my male half. We're not separable.
So he never passed on. He didn't go to the other side, did he?
Oh, yeah. Well, they buried his body.
Yeah, but and, I mean, his spirit kind of lingered.
His spirit just kind of hangs around me. But we're not earthbound. We can go together. We go to other places together. Anyway,
I think he loves you.
Yeah, can you tell that?
I figured that out too.
You did? Okay, I'll tell you how I found him. I found my body a lot and travel around, do all kinds of things. But so one night I found myself in a strange place. It was dark, you know, and I can see in the dark, but this was dark, and I could get a little impression underneath me of some red or something. And I said, this is grisly. And I got a little closer look, you know, there in the dusk. And it was his body. I was inside his coffin.
Oh, my.
Laying on top of his body. And, you know, I don't want to suffocate in there.
I
floated up just a little bit higher above the casket. And guess who was there?
Who?
Him. Alive, but in a coma. Now, I didn't know these things happened. I didn't know these things were possible. But there I was. With him in his casket. I just wanted to be with him, you know, and there I was. And
so you talk to him every day?
Yeah, all the time. But anyway, we're laying there in the coffin, and he was laying there just in the same position he was in the coffin, but he was in a coma. And I said to myself, I might get caught in here, you know. So I got myself out and went to my home to my bed.
I mean,
bed.
You liked him, but not that much, right?
Well, I liked him, but I didn't want to get trapped in there for eternity.
I don't blame you.
But I didn't give up, you know. So I went home, and a month or so, well, maybe a couple of weeks, I didn't keep track of. I was lying there beside my husband one night in bed, and it was just semi-dark.
And your husband, it didn't bother him that Mr. Horton was hanging around?
No, he was scared to death when I met Johnny. He really knew he'd lost me. By the way, he died recently, you know, and I tried to divorce him. He took off in his airplane and crashed and burned, so there's another plane crash.
Oh, my. Single engine?
Yeah.
Oh, my. See, I don't like those planes.
No, that's what Johnny told me. We were sitting there in the Showboat Hotel in Las Vegas, and he was telling me how much he didn't like to fly on those small planes, and he told me in detail. But anyway, he hadn't been alive yet. And when I tell you what happened...
Your week's almost up, though, by the way, Contess.
Huh?
Your week's almost up here. Did you know you've been on the air for 1 week still?
Yeah, well, that's good. I needed this. Okay, so anyway...
Does it make you feel better?
Anyway, it was dark. I want to get this in for you coming off. It was dark, and I looked up by the ceiling, and there was Johnny. He floated in there.
He did?
And he was nude. That really surprised me. And he was still in a coma.
He was nude?
Yeah, and lying there in the shadow, you know, I couldn't see.
Don't you think he should have, like, dressed or something?
Well, but he was still in his coma. He'd come out of his grave.
Well, he probably didn't know he wasn't dressed.
No, well, he was still unconscious, so he was floating up there at the ceiling, just a few feet from the ceiling, and guess what I did?
Oh, don't tell me. I don't want to know.
Huh?
I don't want to know. What did you do?
You do want to know what I did?
What did you do?
And I didn't, and oh, it was so embarrassing, and I had no control over it, and I had no idea.
No, don't freak. This is a family
show. And I floated right up to the ceiling and turned over and laid on top of him facing down.
Okay, well.
And guess what happened then?
No, I don't want to know. I'm going to let you go now. Have a good day, and say hi to Mr. Horton for us. Let's go to Buffalo, New York. John, hello.
George, hello.
Can you top that one?
Give me about 3 hours and I'll come up with a...
Okay.
I'll try. This is not like... I don't know any people like that. But let's just say entertainers and comedians are, in fact, probably ahead of their time. People don't realize that.
You know what? That is probably true.
I'll leave it at that.
And leave it like that.
Mm-hmm. But I'm still getting over that guy with 190 stitches. My cat just gave me 3 stitches last night. I'm bleeding all over.
Yeah, he needs to get checked.
He did? I hope he does, because I sure did. Yeah. But here's my situation, and I usually call in with the same themes. And what's happening with people, and it's less human behavior. I'm talking about, you know, the toys that we get, the Blackberries, the this, the that.
Mm-hmm.
People forget that the sky is blue, that the grass is green. And every new gadget, it makes life easier, but they don't, because you have a boss that says, do three other things. And none of them are done well, because you have these things that make things theoretically easier, but it's not. It doesn't end up being easier. It ends up you just pushing with a bunch of buttons, and it's terrible. Because
what are you saying, though, John?
Real work is.
Throw our cell phones away and all this stuff, or what?
Well, no. No, because there are certain things. I mean, if you want to do away with everything, go back to cavemen and throw away the wheel.
No, we can't do that.
You can't do that, obviously.
Progress.
But
you got to keep moving
from the year zero to the year, well, now, or say the 1800s, people lived the same. You know, you have your gunpowder, you have your printing press, but they lived with horses carrying them.
Well, if you had
a
chance.
In the last 30 years.
If you had a chance to live in any time period, where would you like to live?
Well, they tell me the Eisenhower years were nice. I don't know. I think that Catherine Albright, who you had on the other night, she has a good idea, which is, and you don't have to be of her persuasion religiously to agree, don't go along with what they tell you you have to go along with. It's just not right. I'm not denigrating what she believes in, but it works for people in general. It doesn't matter that, you know, she's of a certain faith.
Haven't you enjoyed, though, every day of your life, no matter what time period you're in or what era? Haven't you enjoyed them all?
You know what? If I'm, say, 40 years old, I will pick three times of my life. What's the best part? I'll pick three. Boom, boom, boom. But you know what? Eugene O'Neill wrote a play called Our Town,
mm-hmm.
and it's about you can't go home again.
You can't.
You can't. I mean, memories are there for a reason, and I guess maybe Philip K. Dick was onto something.
Remember that?
He wrote Total Recall.
Remember that last line in that little verse, the saddest of which, what might have been?
Oh, boy.
You can't go back.
You can't go back. I mean, memories are there for a reason.
You make a mistake, learn.
Reminded of the reality.
But you know what? You got to move on. You got to learn. You got to grow. And that's what you got to do. Thanks, John. Truckers Hotline, Marcus in Missouri. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hello, Marcus. Whereabouts are you?
Hey, I'm at mile marker 14 on I-55, heading towards, I'll be almost in Arkansas, 14 miles
from Missouri. Oh, you're way south. Okay.
And I just came through Dyersburg, was listening to y'all talk. I thought, how ironic, you know, that's where Patsy Cline, I guess, wiped out the plane over there.
Yeah.
Dyersburg, Tennessee. Just a little note here to anybody driving down through this way. This stuff is so thick, the fog down here. You're lucky to see 30, 40 feet in front of your vehicle.
Oh, that is thick. Dangerous.
And it just it seems like it's getting worse.
That's how you get those pileups. Be careful.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I'm going to keep going after I get off here. But I just wanted to mention something. The other day you were talking to a man, I don't remember what he was from, overseas, the United Kingdom or somewhere over there. He was like the ambassador or...
was this the UFO story?
Yeah.
No, that was Nick Pope, who used to be with the Ministry of Defense.
Yeah. And then now he came on, they had him on the very next morning. I was sitting there at a Flying J eating breakfast. And they always have Fox News in there. And Fox News had him on. I couldn't believe I was hearing the voice. I mean, I was looking down at my food, reading my funnies or my opinions in whatever state I'm in. I look, read those parts, throw the rest away.
And there he was again.
And, yeah, I was like, my God, that sounds like the guy. And I looked up, and sure enough, it was. And I noticed the people on Fox, they were trying to discredit everything he was saying. I mean, they were saying, oh, well, that was just balloons and you know, this kind of garbage. It's really sad to me that people like that other caller was just on a little while ago talking about how, you know, I just can't believe it's ludicrous that they're around here. It just surprises me that we'd take that. Like you said, there's so many, you know, artifacts and things like that out here that if you look at it, what else could these people be describing?
Absolutely. Know? That's the position I take. They witnessed something. They didn't quite know what they were looking at. So they say that they're gods.
Yeah, like the Chariots of Fire. Well, the only thing they knew back then was the chariot, so they called it a chariot.
Yep.
You know, I mean, well, what else would you call something that transported people around?
That's
know?
Right.
But or like the you know the wise men that followed the star in of David out through the deserts and stuff. You know, well, what would we think now if we saw a bright light kind of hovering out there? You know, obviously we think something different because we have another word for it. But it seems like they're going to do the best they can to stop this from coming out, even as much as, you know, like the one guy said he played the numbers. But let's say only 1% of this stuff was true. You know what? That's still 1%, you know?
Exactly. I mean, you know, as I've told Linda Moulton Howe, when she investigates these crop circles and formations, and she tends to believe that most are made by very strange circumstances of which she really doesn't know. And I say, Linda, it doesn't matter if 50% or 80% that you think are real. All you need is one that is unusual. That's all you need to make a case of this.
I think that's the biggest problem with our government in general. Like, there should be, in my opinion, I don't like Democrats or Republicans because it's just, at least the Democrats talk the right talk, but they still get in their, you know, fancy limos and drive right by the guy living in the box under the bridge and don't even think twice. you know, and then the Republicans, they're just right in your face, you know, to heck with you. And, you know, I don't care what happens to you. Go do it yourself. You know, like I got turned out homeless after the 2004 hurricanes in Florida.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I lived right in Vero Beach. I was born there back in 63. And when that happened, 2 weeks after the hurricanes, everything went up $100,000 in house prices. And I don't care if your house is missing a roof, shingles, busted windows. If you'd have paid $60,000 2 weeks before, you could have turned around and sold that joker for $100,000.
Unbelievable.
More.
Supply and demand, isn't it?
Exactly. And rent went up from $500 to $1,200. They want first, last, and security. That's $3,600.
Gouging people.
How are you going to get in a place with, you know, and working at only $9 an hour? I run heavy equipment down there, and I was getting $9 an hour. That's it. That's all anybody wants to pay.
You got
to
be careful. Hey, Marcus, thanks. Be careful. We're coming up to a break in about a minute. And then when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the hollow earth as well. If you want to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. And as you know, as I mentioned earlier, the prayer list continues to grow. Call it prayer, call it consciousness. But just send energy to your fellow man or woman on Friday. Just think about that. You would be surprised how well this seems to work for so many people. They've gone in, somebody had a tumor, and they're convinced that you helped get rid of it with sending this light and consciousness. So it does work, so give it a try. On Saturday, Ian Punnett, he's doing his program on robotic technology on Sunday, which I do the first Sunday of every month. We've got Daniel Brinkley and his wife Catherine for the first couple hours, and Tom Blees joins us talking about incredible alternative energy sources. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Indeed, and welcome back to Coast AM. In a moment, we're going to be talking about the hollow earth. Does it exist? That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Hollow earth is a belief that the planet Earth has a hollow interior and possibly a habitable inner surface. A while back, I had a chance to speak with Dr. Brooks Agnew about the possibility of a hollow earth. Welcome back, Brooks. How are you?
Thank you, George. It's great to be here.
Oh, my pleasure. Let's get you an update for the next 15 minutes or so, if you would, about the hollow earth and the quest. What's the latest there?
Well, of course, there's been a lot of evidence coming in the last 6 or 7 months, seismic information, defining the core of the earth much better. 4 days ago, we had two aurora borealises, one over the North Pole, one over the South Pole. It happened to coincide with a time when the solar wind was very low, less than 350 kilometers per second. The proton density was really light. Bottom line is, it really adds credence to the idea that there is a thinning of the crust at the poles, and We have a strong ion stream coming out of the Earth into our own atmosphere, creating the aurora borealis from the ground up. As you know, a year ago in February, NASA launched the Themis probes, which is a set of five satellites that went up to try to understand better why the aurora borealis behaves the way that it does. We don't really have a lot of data from those satellites yet, and I think the reason is the data that's coming in conflicts with the normal, or shall I say, mainstream geological viewpoint of how the Earth is constructed. We're trying to get access to that data now.
Okay, the trip that you were planning, of course, is on hold for now, but you still would like to go, right?
Well, it's scheduled for August of 2009. We were going to go in 2008, but as luck would have it, in 2007 we did a 13-city tour promoting the expedition. Well, it created such popularity that people went and booked the Yamal, which is the nuclear-powered icebreaker, 4 months ahead of schedule. So when it came around time for us to make a move in December or January of 2008 for August of 2008, it was already booked. So we had to postpone until 2009. And it's a good thing we did. We picked up a great producer in Hollywood. And we also picked up a sponsor, which is helping us contact corporate sponsors, which will help us retain some of the film rights when we get done with this.
Absolutely, because this could be huge if you do find what you're looking for.
Well, you know, there are several aspects to this. One is, of course, the global warming aspect, being that the ice caps have really melted back. But it's still a long way to where we want to go. It's not exactly the North Pole. It's way high in the Arctic Circle. And there's really only one ship that can make the journey, and that's this nuclear-powered icebreaker. We've looked at diesel-powered icebreakers, but they just don't have the fuel to get there, spend 7 or 8 days taking measurements, and then get back. And the last thing we want to do is get locked in ice for a year up there, not being able to get back.
If you find that Admiral Byrd was correct, if you find that there's a hole up there in the middle of the planet, how do you think this trip will take place? Explain the parameters for me, Brooks, assuming you find what you're looking for.
Well, if our calculations are correct and our measurement teams lead us to the right spot and we find, at the very least, an opening in the crust deep beneath the ocean where perhaps two oceans are blending and sea life is passing back and forth, and that's the reason we're seeing these million-year-old life forms show up in fishermen's nets all over the planet, that's going to change everything. It's probably going to earn the team that finds that the Nobel Prize in geology or oceanography. But at the very most, if we do find a curvature of the crust and we find something like Edgar Rice Burroughs' hole beneath the fog in the north region, then everything changes. And we will be broadcasting film, or digital anyway, live during the entire 15-day voyage. So what we see, you will see.
Now, the curvature would be ever so slight that you really wouldn't notice it as you move along. Would there be then ocean water right into the curve? I mean, it would just keep flowing in, right?
Yes, there would. And you're right. The curvature would be so slight because the Earth is the diameter that it is. We only have about 8 or 9 miles of perspective. So if we are looking at a curvature with a radius, you know, anything greater than that, you're really not going to notice it. It's all going to be sea level to you. That's why we have to have a precision gyroscope on the ship so that we can track the curvature of the Earth by watching this stable gyroscope. Once it begins to over-rotate, we know we've sailed into what's often called the oceanic depression.
If you boat yourself into this thing, how do you get out of it?
Well, the idea is not to sail this 23,000-ton, 75,000-horsepower ship into the Hollow Earth. I don't think the Murmansk Shipping Company would enjoy that. but we could circumnavigate it, and there is a smaller boat on the ship, and there's also a helicopter on the ship. So we do plan on making daily excursions by air from the ship out ahead and off to the sides so that we can cover a lot more territory in a very short amount of time.
So you could fly into it?
We could.
Would you see anything, do you think, except for water?
Well, other witnesses, not the least of which is Admiral Byrd, say that there is a place where the warm wind blows. It is a place where there's liquid water and tropical plants and birds and bees and flowers, and that's not the kind of thing we should find up there. But if we do, we're going to get it on film.
Well, and he also witnessed extra beings that live down there.
Well, if you go by a lot of the writings that are circulating, one is actually called the Admiral Byrd Diary. And
which may not be his diary, right?
Yeah, and I've spoken to a couple of people who actually held it in their hands, and they're getting on up in years themselves and can't remember all the details to it. We have to be skeptical because we're scientists. We're not going up there on channeled information. We're going up there once we leave the dock in Murmansk, Russia. There's no turning back. There are no supply ships. There's no rescue ship. We have to take everything with us that we're going to need, and it's not going to be easy. We're talking high seas, high winds, cold temperatures, icebergs. There'll be seasickness, possible injuries. It's not going to be easy.
Beyond your own curiosity, Brooks, do you think the opening is there?
I have to believe that there's something to the evidence. As we approach it, as we refine our hypothesis, as we build better experiments based on the data that's coming in from remote viewing, from satellite data, from earthquake data, we're getting better and better at refining our measurement systems. It looks promising that there is a gap between the crust and the core. It may be as little as 200 miles, it may be as much as 1,100 miles, but I can tell you, if there is a void there, there will be life there. Now, it might be microbial, and it might be highly complex.
Do you believe that modern scientists, through governments, know that this opening is there?
Wow, I have my doubts. You know, of course, I trust my government implicitly. I know they tell me everything they know.
Yeah.
So let me get my tongue out of my cheek here.
Yeah.
I think that based on the data and based on the lack of data from very good instrumentation that's been recently launched, I think they're holding back something. And lots of people have written me letters and phone called me and said, you know, they're not going to let you go, and the government is going to prevent you from going. And I just don't believe that at all. I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, and we have no fear. We're going forward.
Yeah, I was just with Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell a few months ago in Washington, D.C., whom I trust explicitly. And he tells me that he believes we're being visited by extraterrestrials, always happen to have occurred and is happening now. So one question I've never asked him, Brooks, whether he believes in the hollow earth theory. He might have seen it.
It's interesting. We look at satellite data as much as we can get our hands on, and the poles, for some reason, are covered with a very thick cloud cover most of the time.
Most of the time, that's true.
Even the 1968 photos, which had to be pieced together like a pie when they were stitched together, and mind you, this is film, not digital. And of course, there's a large void in the middle where the core of these pictures are put together. There's cloud cover going as far back as 1968. The only way to see it by air is to fly under 4,000 feet, which Admiral Byrd did. Hence, he's an aviation hero instead of a statistic. But we can't get a pilot today to fly a jet under 4,000 feet. They won't do it. So the only way there is by sea. And this is the first expedition of its kind.
If the hole is there, how far down do you think it goes? Does it go all the way through? I've seen drawings that this planet looks almost like there are two pieces to it, and it's not totally connected.
Well, that's because you're looking at it on a flat piece of paper.
Okay.
What you need to look at it is like an orange that has a small hole in the top and a small hole in the bottom. And then there's a void between the skin and the core of the orange. So it's difficult to draw on paper. So what you're seeing is a cutaway of the hollow earth. If the continents and this is another really excellent piece of data, the continents of Earth fit together exactly like a key and a lock all the way around the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And not the shoreline that you see, but the continental shelves that are beyond the shoreline.
Like a puzzle.
Yes. And when you fit them together, the Earth is one-third its present size. So if you triple the diameter of the planet, then there's got to be a void between the core and the crust. And I'm looking at some data from the University of Illinois that was recently published, and we've got it posted on our website at phoenixsciencefoundation.org. Incredibly, they have measured, using really excellent seismology, a solid core of iron crystal, which is much, much more dense than regular iron, which makes a lot of sense, since even if we take the density of our current crust, which we've only bored into at about 3 or 4 miles, in fact, the deepest hole in the world is being bored in Russia right now, and it's going to go to 40,000 feet. We just shipped 15 shipping containers of lubricant up there, so I know how deep that hole is. That's a barely scratching the surface of our planet, George. We're talking a crust 800 miles thick.
Can you imagine, if you find this, what it would do to science?
Well, hopefully it would do the same thing that the discovery the Earth was round did.
Yeah, probably even more so, because it opens up the question of what else is there.
Sure. I mean, if you think that the Earth is being visited by ETs and has been visited for a long, long time, what is it, 60-something percent of the country has actually seen a UFO, where do they park? Where do they stay when they're here? They don't go back out into space and then come in for a brief visit and then leave again. They've got a home here somewhere.
And it could be right there in the hollow Earth.
Very well could be. Lots of legends say it is. This is the third book and final book in the trilogy. When we originally wrote The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 1, it was just under 1,000 pages. Our publisher said, no, cut it in half. So we did. And we released that book, and it jumped up to number 48 on Amazon. It was amazing. Then the second book came out 13 months later. This book ties the three books together. So you've got the complete end times analysis from a religious standpoint, from a historical standpoint, and also from a scientific standpoint, all in three books. Now, the last part of the book, it's a part two, actually, is called Unlocking the Secret. Because when we got finished with the end times books, there was so much doom and gloom in it. We just had to have a message of hope at the end of it.
Good.
So there was a recent publication called The Secret. It came out. It enjoyed magnificent marketing, and lots of people took advantage of it. But it was missing the tools, the math, and everything was missing from it. So I decided to take a look at it mathematically and from a physics point of view, and we actually discovered the physics of the soul in this, and we put it in the book. The last 125 pages are a stunning a paternal way to look at the law of attraction. And it has nothing to do with metaphysics. It's all science. It's all mathematics. And we've proven it over and over again that it works.
How do you tie it into 2012?
Well, the Mayans originally had a mathematic calendar.
You have made an incredible glance at global warming, regardless of its causes, and you somehow tie it into the Mayan end time.
Yes. What happens is, as the solar system in our part of the galaxy goes through the zodiac, the axis that goes through the center of the Earth actually draws a circle in the zodiac. We're coming to the end of the age of Pisces, and we're getting ready to start the age of Aquarius.
Mm-hmm.
This is the, shall we say, 11 o'clock position of the Mayan calendar. That is to say, it's the end of the age that was originally quoted by Christ, by Muhammad, by several other prophets. This is the end of the age. And what it means is that this solar system is arriving at a place in our galaxy where it lines up with the rift in the galaxy, which it's believed is a corridor that leads directly to the black hole, a supermassive revolving black hole at the center of our galaxy. That alignment is going to energize a lot of things in our planet, and it's going to cause the two phases of matter that make up the Earth, and we discussed that from the first volume, to separate. It's also going to cause all the planets in our solar system to warm, and they are all doing it.
And it's starting.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden. And I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. I need to know. Now I can see the light.